This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour. I am Justice. With us, as always, Dennis Borges.
I am right here. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So yourself?
And our Portuguese word of the week, boa tarde. Can you say that?
Sorry.
Boa tarde.
Boa tarde.
Good job. All okay, right. That means good afternoon to everyone listening to us.
Ah, I will try to lead off with that.
Okay. So here we are. It's our third show, and yep. We're excited to be here. We have a packed show, and Esmeralda's here, by the way, doing all the controls for us, so everything will go good because she's doing her magic. Our first guest, Justice, is a young man living right now in the city of Tulare. He is the current president of the Fresno State Portuguese Club, which was founded just less than a year ago. And he's the founding president of the Fresno State Portuguese Club. And he also did an exchange program with the University of the Azores through the Jordan College of Agricultural Science and Technology over the summer. His name is Blake Garcia. Blake, are you here with us?
I'm here.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon. Boa tarde.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking time from your busy life. I know going to school and working and all the things that you're involved with. Let's start with talking a little bit about the Fresno State Portuguese Club. I know that you were the founding president. I know you were one of the founding directors. You were amongst a group of students who started the club. So tell us a little bit. Tell me, Justice here in our listening audience, how the club came about. How did the idea come about and what happened?
So there were two now former students of Fresno State, Leslie and Jonathan. They went to Alcidia Gomes, who is our advisor, and said that, we needed a Portuguese club. We needed something to promote our Portuguese heritage within our school. The Portuguese Beyond Borders was just starting, and Portuguese awareness was starting to come up around campus. So they went to Alcidia and said, we need something to help get the students involved. And that's how the club became about. Leslie, I believe, reached out to me, and after they had gotten the bylaws started, and we had the first officer election, and that's where I came in and kind of took over for them. So our main focus is to spread Portuguese awareness around the school and the surrounding cities, mainly because there are so many Portuguese people at our school. And one mistake that many people think is that you have to be Portuguese to be part of this club, but you don't. It's just to bring Portuguese awareness and to show people about our heritage and what we do.
So anyone, any student who is either undergrad or graduate student at Fresno State can belong to the Fresno State Portuguese Club, correct?
Correct. Any student at Fresno State can belong to the Portuguese Club.
Okay. And some of the things that you did, I know that you were involved. One of the major activities, I think, was bringing over, we had about 325 high school students from four different high schools, actually five, from the three high schools in Tulare, from Hillmar and from Turlock, in the month of March of last year. Tell us a little bit about that.
So every year, and as you know, this happens every year at Fresno State, where about 300 students come from around the valley to come see the school and learn a little bit more about a Portuguese heritage. It's kind of they get, two things. They get to learn more about Portuguese heritage and they get to learn more about Fresno State, because many of them are future students of Fresno State. So they come, they tour the school, they learn a lot about the academics, and then they learn about Portuguese stuff. We present, traditional folklore dances. We have traditional Portuguese lunch of linguiça sandwiches. So it's something to just get students the high school students excited about the future and to know that their heritage is still part of their life when they're in college.
Fantastic. Also, let's transition a little bit from the Fresno State Portuguese Club. I know, first of all, before we transition from that to your experience in the Azores this last summer, let's talk a little bit about something coming up with the Fresno State Portuguese Club, which is an upcoming meeting. Can you talk a little bit about that, too?
Yeah, we're going to have our first meeting of the semester next Tuesday at 5 p.m. In the Ag 1 conference room at Fresno State. Mainly, we'll be talking to the new students about what the club does, and we will be having our officer election meeting. So if there are any Fresno State students listening, it'll be next Tuesday at 5 p.m. in the Ag 1 conference room. So try your best to be there. We know it's hard with night classes and scheduling, but we encourage everyone to do their best to be there.
And, of course, if there's no, there better be some Fresno State students listening, but also their parents or their grandparents. It's if you're out there listening, it's encourage your son or daughter, your grandkids, or your cousins, et cetera, to belong. I think it's a good way to connect, right?
Yes, it's a great way to connect with, you know, not only students in your culture, but students that are also interested in how our culture is.
Okay, now let's transition over to the other part that we wanted to have you on for, which is the Jordan College of Agricultural Science and Technology has been doing an exchange program with the Azores for 4 years, but this year was quite unique. It was the first time that we did an internship, and so you were one of the four students who went to the Azores on an internship in the island of Terceira, in the Terceira campus, the Angra do Heroísmo campus of the University of the Azores, but you're actually more involved in industry. So just to preface to our listeners, Blake is the grandson of immigrants. His parents were born here, but both grandparents on both sides, mom's side and dad's side, were immigrants who came over in the 1960s and have a strong connection to their roots, their islands. And so Blake was not new to the Azores. He had been there probably at least 9 or 10 times at least. And but you saw the Azores a little bit different. So tell us a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, so this internship experience this year, it was the first year is a little bit different from what it used to be. Last year, it was more university research-based where the students spent most of their time at the university with professors. But this year, it was more industry-based. It was the internship. They did an internship. I did mine in Cinque Feitas at a place called Queijo Vaquinha, which is, you know, a cheese creamery. They produce cheese and butter and milk, and it's all from their own herd. So everything was done in-house. So I was able to see all those steps and all those processes of how that came about. It was really interesting to go back to SEDA with this program, mainly because, like you said, I've been there multiple times. We go almost every year, and I've been there multiple times. And when we go, it's vacation and visiting family. We don't really see the industry side of stuff. We don't see how the people actually live and work there. So for me to go this year and be able to see that and notice the differences between that and when we go just for vacation, that really helped me to understand how my family from there lives and how they work and how different things are from here compared to over there and the business practices they have. So it was a real big eye opener to see it in a different light.
And so you were there for a whole month, correct?
Yes, I did.
You stayed an extra.
Yes, the internship was for a month, but I decided to stay an extra month. I had family coming over from America over there for vacation, and I just have so much family over there still that I decided to extend my trip an extra month and stay there and visit with family and you know, enjoy and make memories with them.
Now, when you were there for the month-long internship at Queijo Vaquinha, at the same time, there were the San Juaninas going on. Was there much work going on during the San Juaninas, Blake? Be honest.
So for me, not too, like, it wasn't too bad. They do like their vacation days over there. They like taking time off and relaxing. So,
and that's a good thing, though.
It's a good thing. It is a good thing because, you know, San Juaninas, it was nice to be flexible with your schedule. there is one gentleman, there were four of us, and we were split up between, you know, four different companies. One gentleman, his company wasn't as leaning it as mine and the other ones were, but it was nice for us to get to see. I've seen Central Ninas multiple times. I've seen Festas of Triamold. I've seen all those festas. But the gentlemen that were with me, they had never been. They're not even Portuguese. So it was nice for me to be able to take them and so they can see how stuff is done over there. They were amazed how it is over there. So with Central Ninas falling right in the middle of our trip, it made for a tremendous experience for all of us.
Indeed. So the other three students that went with you, one is Hispanic, Anthony, and then there are two who are actually from India. So, I mean, it's quite a different culture than the Southeast Asian. So talk a little bit also when you were, you know, when you go to the Azores and you were there, of course, you were the only one of the four that spoke Portuguese. I know that Anthony speaks Spanish, so he was able to survive pretty well, you know, with the Portuñol. But how important was it for you? Was it much easier, you think, for you than the other two who did not speak any Portuguese?
Oh, yeah. I think it was way easier. You know, I spoke Portuguese. That made it tremendously easy. Anthony spoke Spanish, so it helped him to get around. But there were a lot of things that the other boys couldn't really do on their own unless I was with them or unless our professor from over there, Emiliana Silva, was with them. You know, luckily, Cage Vikinga, when Emiliana found out that I spoke Portuguese, she was relieved because where I was at Cage Vikinga, there was absolutely no one that spoke English. Mm. Throughout the other companies that the other boys were at, there was always someone that did speak English, so it was easier for the boys to work around the company. Now, when we would go out in public, of course, restaurants and stuff, they have English speakers, but some places don't. So I had a big advantage speaking Portuguese when we were there.
Okay, one other thing. I know you've gone there multiple times as someone who was born here. Your parents are already born here as well, but with a strong connection. However, what's the biggest thing that you like? I mean, don't tell me you like everything, but what you like best about going to the Azores? What's the number one thing that really draws you to the island of Terceira?
I just love the culture and, you know, the family dynamic over there, especially how small the island is. Everyone is pretty close. You see everyone every day. You see, you know, you can go to the store and you run into eight cousins at once because of how close everything is. And just, you know, the Portuguese celebrations, the Central Ninas, I love going to Central Ninas. It's one of my favorite celebrations ever. And just seeing how, you know, we see many people from home that are Portuguese, but seeing going over there and everybody is Portuguese and everyone is involved and you know, it's not just the committee at a hall that's putting on the festa, it's the city of Angra. It's everybody. And I love that. I love being part of that culture.
Okay, so you're on your last semester just about at Fresno State, correct?
Correct. I'll be graduating in December.
And what is your major, if you don't mind telling us?
I'm majoring in ag business and I'm minoring in communication.
Okay, so good luck, and thanks so much, and thanks for all your work involved in the Portuguese club. You were also in the Portuguese club at Tulare Union High School. If my memory does serve me right, you were SOPRES president, correct?
I was SOPRES vice president my senior year.
You were vice president. Okay, well, yeah. You probably did all the work. That's why I remember you were president. So thanks again, Blake, for your involvement. Thanks for the time you took for the Portuguese American Hour from the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute here at KGSD. And good luck, and hopefully everyone will have a good turnout on the next Tuesday, the 29th, correct?
Yes, next Tuesday.
At what time again and where, please?
It'll be at 5 p.m. in the Ag 1 conference room at the campus. If you don't know where that is, it's right near the dairy. If you go by the dairy, you'll see the buildings that are on the corner of the street by the roundabout. It's right over there.
Thanks so much, Blake. That was Blake Garcia. Thank you. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
So that was Blake Garcia, who is the president of the current president and the founding president of the Fresno State Portuguese Club, which is something brand new. It started, you know, less than a year ago, they have been involved in a couple of things. It's always hard to start something brand new.
Oh, of course.
But I think this semester they'll even do more because there was a lot of things to do at the beginning, the bylaws and, you know, the logos and all the other stuff that you have to do through the university. So thanks again to Blake. And I think it's interesting for people to know how the young people enjoy this experience of these exchange programs. That's why they're so important between here and, in this case, the Azores, but anywhere in the world. I have a student right now who is in my Portuguese 1B class at Fresno State. And yesterday we had a visitor, or day before, I should say, and she was very much in favor of students doing exchange programs. She did an exchange program to Peru, and she said it basically changed her life. So it's a really eye-opening.
It's always good to hear a different experience. And I guess, well, I mean, he had been there so many times, he basically already knew, but hearing
he has an advantage.
But hearing his new experience that he had with the act, like I said, the industry side of it, never experiencing that and going in what he wants to go to.
And that's important. And even when students go with exchange programs or just like a study abroad or like even a trip, you know, teacher-led or faculty-led, it's important because, like Blake said, many times he would go there, he'd go to the festers, he'd go to his family with his family. They have a home there. They would go to other family members. But then, you know, you don't get the experience of things that, you know, sometimes you don't do with your family.
Yeah.
The visits to the museums, the universities, you know, and in this case, you know, industry, which was very, very important.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, that was our first interview. We will have a second interview in a few minutes with a young lady by the name of Bruna Ferreira, which I'll introduce. But it is time for our Portuguese history moment, so we'll be right back with that. So here we are with our Portuguese history moment, and today we're going to go back in time again, like we did the first show. We're going to go back to the beginning of the Portuguese nation, and we're going to talk about another king. Portugal was a monarchy for most of its life, from the 1100s all the way until 1910. And this king is King Dinis. I share his name. I wasn't named because of him, but I do share his name. King Dinis, D-I-N-I-S or D-I-N-I-Z, or actually in English, Dennis, was born October 9th of 1261. He died on January the 7th of 1325. He was the sixth king of Portugal. He reigned Portugal from 1279 to 1325. And he strengthened the kingdom by improving the economy and reducing the power of the nobility and the church. He was the son of Afonso III. Dinis was educated at a court subject to both French and Castilian cultural influences and became a very competent poet of his time. He founded the first university in Portugal, in Lisbon, in the year of 1290. It was called Estudos Gerais, and it's one of the oldest universities in Europe. In 1290 in Lisbon, later on the university moved to Coimbra, where there is a statue of Dinis. At home, he made the authority of the crown supreme by intervening in local government, by reducing the power of the nobility, and by combating the supremacy of the clergy, particularly in regards to their territorial wealth and with different decrees. He had several concordats with the papacy, with the pope of the time, one in 1289 and another one a year later. That ended lots of different struggle between the monarchy and the church. Dinis was had a very special interest in land, and he is the encouraging forestry plantation and the fuller development of the country's agricultural resources. He also showed great concern for shipbuilding and for the extension and protection of commerce. The last years of his reign were disturbed triggered by a rebellion provoked by his own son, the future Afonso IV, who succeeded to the throne on his father's death. Denise's wife would become a saint in the Catholic Church, Saint Elizabeth Isabel, Rainha Santa Isabel of Portugal, whom we honor here in the Portuguese American communities throughout California throughout the different festas. They have a very strong influence of her. So our moment in history today was King Denise of Portugal.
King Denise, and it sounded like he was very celebrated. And of course, like you said, they celebrate his wife now.
Yeah, he was, and it was a popular name because of him. Mm-hmm. It became unpopular, then popular again. But yeah, and his wife is, which we'll talk about in future episodes.
Of course. Okay, so that was our moment in Portuguese history. We are going to take a quick break and be back with our second interview, Bruna Ferreira.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Took me a second to get that. But yeah, so we will be right back.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Deixo Gaspar tua procura da sorte que Deus me deu. Embarco nesta aventura, o que for há de ser meu. Navegar na ilusão de encontrar a minha sorte sem nenhuma direção. Parto sem rumo, sem norte, e há de ser o que for e o que for há de ser. Quem não tem um grande amor, então um dia há de ter. No mar há tanto esplendor, como histórias por dizer.
And welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour. Once again, I am Justice Neves, joined with Dennis Borges.
Yes, we are. We are here, the team, Justice, the Neves and Borges team. And we have our second guest on the line, and she is a most impressive young lady. She knows that I just love her to death, which is Bruna Ferreira. She is currently the Portuguese language teacher at Tulare Western High School. Welcome, Bruna.
Obrigada. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Obrigado for taking the time. I know you're quite busy doing all the work that you do. All the great work, I should preface by saying that. First of all, I've known Bruna for a while because I met her when she was a high school student, a student of my good friend and colleague, José Luís da Silva. And she was involved very heavily in all of the different Portuguese organizations, including the Portuguese Club at the San José High School. And then Bruna has been involved in the Portuguese community probably ever since she was born. But anyway, thank you for taking the time. And let's talk a little bit about that, Bruna. So you were obviously born here. Your parents are immigrants, I believe, correct?
Correct.
And from the area of San Jose, which has a very strong Portuguese-American community. What made you at a young age, because you've been involved since a very young age, what made you get involved in, I believe you're involved in the folklore group and also the Philharmonica, the Portuguese marching band. What made you get involved in, like, Portuguese involvement?
Well, I really have my parents to thank for that. They really encouraged me to be involved in the Portuguese community. I mean, I was at my first festa, I was just a couple weeks old. My very first festa was the Aya festa in San Jose, Irmandad Descent. And then from there, I was queen for that Irmandad. And between then, I joined band. I was about 7-8 years old and going 18 years strong. It's a little hard now since I live in Tulare now. It's a little bit of a drive, but I've been doing that. And then I've been doing folklore with Tim Sotrora. For about 12 years now. This past folklore festival was 12 years. So, I mean, I've really just chosen to stay involved because, I think it's really important. And most of my family still lives in Portugal, and I really, you know, my community is my family, and it's really important to me to stay connected to those roots. Of course, it's becoming a little harder now. Mm-hmm. I've traded folklore practice and band practice for credential courses 2-3 times a week and grading papers, but I mean, I can't complain. I love what I'm doing right now, and yes, I'm teaching Portuguese. I started my second year in August, so it's been great.
Let's talk about that. You went to high school. I know you were at San Jose High School, correct? With many other teachers, but one of them was our good friend José Luis da Silva. And then you in high school, you were also involved in the Portuguese club there, correct?
Correct. So. All 4 years I was involved, and then my sophomore year I was secretary of the club, and then I was president both my junior and senior year. And then I helped with we had a little folklore group. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a class, but it was something the kids did on the side, and we did that, and we had club fairs, and you know, back when we were able to sell lingüisa on school campus, we did that too, and that was always a good time.
Sure.
And then of course we had the field trip that we went on, and Portuguese UC at UC Berkeley. Right. Yeah. That was always exciting.
It was always fun to see have the two schools perform, and then at the end everybody come together and perform and dance together. From then you went to the university, and you went to San Jose State, correct?
Correct. And so there I majored in behavioral science, mm-hmm. and I minored in Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
And
go ahead.
I studied abroad in Portugal as well for this summer through the professor-led program with Senhora Diolinda Down.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great too, because I got to work towards my minor and be in Portugal.
Right. That's also, let's talk a little bit about that. So you were able to get units for your minor, and you were able also to be in Portugal for a few weeks. How important do you think that is for students who are studying the language to actually, especially college students, to actually have that opportunity?
I mean, I would recommend it to anyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, even going to Portugal as often as I do. So we started the program in São Miguel, and then we went to mainland Portugal. So the program itself was about 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And even just going to mainland Portugal was a little bit of a culture shock for me, you know, going from the Azores and to mainland Portugal and just completely being immersed in the language,
mm-hmm.
I think is extremely beneficial to anyone who wants to study the language and know more about the culture. And you learn a lot. You learn a lot in such a short period of time. And a lot of these things you can't really, you know, learn out of a textbook. And I just think the experience was great, and I would highly recommend it to anybody. I believe they're still going strong with this program. So.
Yes, it is. Yeah, the program still exists, and there's other universities that have developed, you know, some similar things as well. Because, as you said, you visited the islands, and this is kind of a theme that we had with Blake Garcia, who's our first guest. The same way, you know, he did an internship for 1 month in the Azores Interstate, and he saw the island from a different perspective. It's totally different when you go to visit family than you do something like this. I mean, you kind of see another aspect of the language and the culture, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit. So from your minor, all of a sudden, you know, Tulare needed a Portuguese teacher because I decided to retire. And you applied and you got hired, as you should have. They did the wise choice. That was the best thing they did. You are teaching now, as you said, you've just started a few months ago, your second year. I know you say you love it. What has been some of the most memorable things that have happened to you, and what makes it exciting for you to be in a classroom teaching a language that basically has been part of your heritage forever?
Sure. So I think one of the most rewarding things is having your kids come back to you and say, hey, I had this conversation with my Ava and my Avu, because they were able to. And so a lot of these kids, they're kids, but they right. are, young adults, you mm-hmm. know, they're high school kids. And so they, a lot of them, their parents were already born here in the United States. A lot of their grandparents were already born here in the United States, but some of their grandparents still speak Portuguese. And so that was a lot different than when I went to high school, I'm a first generation Luso-American. A lot of my friends were first generation. So it was very different, but still very rewarding because I can still see the interest in the kids wanting to learn Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I go home every day and I think, okay, if I can influence a kid, one kid a day, I'm happy with that. You know, if they learned one thing, and I see how interested they are in the culture. You know, they ask me questions and they want to know more. My abuela said this. Can you tell me more about that?
Right.
And so it's been great.
And also, one of the things, and I'm sure it's the same thing is happening, I've been away for, you know, a year and a half almost now from the high school. I have contact, as you know, here through Fresno State and the College of the Sequoias, but it's a totally different situation. But one of the things that was happening when I was there was the great number of students who are Hispanic who are very interested also in the language and culture. I'm sure you have a great number of kids as well, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And even when I went to high school, that was the case too.
Right.
And that's they're both equally rewarding. But I think it's even more rewarding to see that someone from a different culture, a different background, ethnicity, is just as interested in learning about our Portuguese language and culture, which I think says a lot.
And they're usually very interested. I mean, they're usually, you know, it's an easy transition because the languages do have lots of
very
similarities.
Similar.
Yeah. But they're so interested in it, you know, that it makes you really want to do the best you can.
Absolutely.
And lastly, as we end this segment, I thank you for sharing your thoughts and your how the Portuguese culture and the Portuguese language and learning it and, you know, being with your family has shaped who you are, albeit quite a few hours away from home. I know that's tough. I know that's just recently, last Friday, if I'm not mistaken, there was the an event that we started. It's going to be 20 years, actually, next year. It was in 2000, the Portuguese Festival for the Youth, and that's always a fun. Tell us a little bit about that, how that went.
So it went great. We had close to 250 students go. So basically what it is we have, so all three high schools in Tulare have a Portuguese program, and we all get together at the TDS Hall here in Tulare, and we have the school floor group perform, and we have cultural activities. We serve the kids cultural food. And it's just a day to celebrate the Portuguese culture, specifically in the Azores.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, we talk about mainland Portugal, too. And we teach the kids dances. We have guest speakers. And it's just a day dedicated to Portugal. And mm-hmm. it's my second year that I've done that. And so it's been a great success. And I thank you for starting that because going 20 years strong, that's a big deal. So.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll see you like we did last year as well. We'll see you in March for the Portuguese Youth Day at Fresno State. I actually have the date now, and I'll be sending it to you and to your two other colleagues, Belina and Clement, there at the high school, so we can start putting that together. Lastly, any words that you'd like to share with us as far as where you see the program at Tulare Western going from here? It's been growing quite a bit. I think that you have more students than you had last year, correct?
I do. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I do. So, I mean, from here on out, my only wish is that not only the program here, but at the other two high schools continues to flourish. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to, teaching for many years, and
right.
You know, I hope to see the interest for many years to come. And
yes, when I'm 91 years old in 30 years, I want to go to your retirement. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Like a plan.
Thank you so much. You're the best as always, and you know that. I've always said that, and you are. Thank you, Bruna, for joining us. Best of luck to you and to the Tulare Western High School, and of course all the other two high schools. We will be conversing with them as well, and keep on teaching those students and encourage them to come to Fresno State so we can continue as well here. Thank you again, and best of luck to you, Bruna.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. So that was Bruna Ferreira, a very interesting and dynamic young lady.
Yeah, she sounded very, I mean, of course, like you said, she's been ingrained, the culture's been ingrained with her since she was a kid. And I'm sure it's got to feel good for you hearing your replacements doing so well. And
she actually is at another high school, but she got hired because the teacher that was at that high school, Belinda Feijo, went to take my place, and she's taking there. But Belinda is also doing a good job. And Clemente Fagundes, which was the other teacher at Mission Oak High School, who I hope to have both of them as a guest here shortly in the next few weeks. It's a growing program. Tulare Joint Union High School District has three high schools. I believe this year they have over 420 students in all three high schools taking Portuguese. So it continues to be the largest high school Portuguese language program in California.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And hopefully a lot of them will come to Fresno State and continue with studying Portuguese. And the majority of the students are not Portuguese. When I taught there, and as Bruna says as well with her, mm-hmm. the majority of students are Hispanic students who are fluent in Spanish and who take a third language. And then it blossoms. I mean, and how many people can speak three languages? You know, I have a little story just in about 30 seconds. I did the folklore group, as Bruna mentioned. Belinda Feijo is now the teacher there at Tulare Union, and we about 16 years ago I started with a class that also taught folklore, and many of my students are Hispanic, and I went to an event where they played for a school where they performed, and then I had a young man who was a young lady's father come to me, and he asked me if I spoke Spanish, and my Spanish is not very good, but it's good enough, and mm-hmm. we communicated, me and half Portuguese, half Spanish, and him and half Spanish and half Portuguese. And he said, I'm the reason that my daughter's taking Portuguese. And the daughter, by the way, is just graduating next year from UC Merced. I'll never forget her name, Maricelli. And she took Portuguese, and she... he said, I'm the reason my daughter took Portuguese. And he was a farm worker. And I said, why would you encourage your daughter to take Portuguese? Because I told her, you speak Spanish at home, and you're learning English at school. If you learn Portuguese, you'll know three languages, so you can go anywhere from Alaska to Argentina and speak to everybody. And that's true, because those are the three languages spoken.
Yeah.
From Brazil, to Argentina, all the other countries speak Spanish, Brazil, Portuguese, or English.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, you can go anywhere in North and South America, and you can talk to anybody. So it's a great program.
Yeah, no, the power of communication, it's a very, very strong thing.
And we'll be right back with our next segment, so stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And we are back. It was short. It's the book of the week. The book of the week is called The Portuguese Presence in California. It was published originally in Portuguese by a professor, Eduardo Meion Dias, from University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA. Has been retired for many years. It was translated to English by two good friends of mine, Catherine Baker and Bobby J. Chamberlain, and myself. The three of us took on this project, and we translated to the English, and it's now in English called The Portuguese Presence in California. It's not a very long book. It's a book that only has, I believe, about 144 pages. But it doesn't give you the detailed history of every single thing that's happened in the Portuguese-American community in California, but it gives you an overall view of the Portuguese in California. For example, it has, a few chapters, and the chapters are easy to follow along, and it breaks down by basically what the Portuguese were involved and how they've become part of this state. So it's a good book that I highly recommend to everyone who'd like to know a little bit about the Portuguese presence in California. Just a short 145 pages, you can learn a little bit about our presence, from the tuna industry to the dairy industry, from academia to the Portuguese press, all in this condensed version called The Portuguese Presence in California. It's published by Portuguese Heritage Publications of California online. You can find it wherever you buy books. Okay, Portuguese Presence in California is our book of the week.
Sounds good to me. So again, like I said, book of the week right there, Portuguese Presence in California. Make sure you check that out. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have our poem of the week and our recipe of the week.
Correct. We will have our guest, Filomena Pimentel Rocha, so stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM. Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour. Not going to waste any time here. Just going to toss it right over to Dennis with our poem of the week.
Correct. We will start that right now. And our poem of the week is from a poet from the island of Flores, Pedro de Silveira, whose father was born here in the city of Fresno. Oh. His grandfather was an immigrant. And the poem has been translated from Portuguese to English by a good friend of mine, Professor Jorge Monteiro, who is professor emeritus from Brown University and published in a book called Poems in Absentia. And it's called The Last Return. With its mallows, mulberry, and magnolia trees, the last two possibly my age, the patio at the front of the house imitated a running veranda over the sea to the east. I raise the window sash and stand there looking at this that I so many times have looked at, but today it feels strange or, who knows, inimical. The pictures are still here as they were, in gold frames on the walls, and the rocking chair with one arm broken sleeps in the shadows in the corner where they left it. I turn again to the open window. Smooth, quiet, bright blue is the sea. Nothing but sea to the very end. Still, for an instant, among the carnations that hang on in the garden, a cat watches me, stranger that I am to him in my own house.
Beautiful words right there. Sorry. I seem to notice a lot of the times these poems often have to do with the landscape, it seems like.
Yeah.
That's
missing, and the people are gone, mm-hmm. whether some of them by death, others by immigration. It's a common theme. In the poems of the Azores, immigration, missing people, our word for it, which is saudade, missing someone. But we shouldn't have saudade the food, because we're going to go right now to our guest who is on the phone, and it is our recipe of the week. And our guest is Filomena Pimentel Rocha. Filomena, are you here with us? I hope.
I am.
You are. Fantastic. And you are going to give us the best, and I do mean that, the best masa cevada recipe, because you and your mom make the best. And so, please, thank you so much, first of all, for taking the time from your busy schedule. I know you're working hard. You're at school. You're going back to school. You are kind of a phenomenon in Tulare. And among those phenomenons, you also have a great sweet bread, Portuguese sweet bread, or as we call it in Portuguese, massa cevada recipe. So give it to us, please.
Okay, so I start off with 5 pounds of bread flour, and then 2.5 pounds of all-purpose flour plus 2 cups, 6 tablespoons of yeast, 3 dozen eggs, 1.5 pounds of butter, and that's real butter, not margarine, 4 cups of sugar, and here's a kicker, 4 ounces of liquid sweet and low, and then like your palm size of salt. And that usually gives me about 14 loaves of like a takeout circle pan. Mm-hmm. So it's about 9 ounces, nine inches actually. So it gives me about 14 loaves.
And how do we make it? What do we do with all that stuff?
So first, I usually start off with creating my yeast. With the yeast, I dissolve the yeast with the warm water, and then I add the 2 cups of sugar and 6 eggs, and I'll beat that with the mixer so it kind of gets fluffy. And I let that sit aside. I sift all my flour, and I use the old sifter because I had my mother-in-law bring one back from Shida. Mm-hmm. So I use that to sift all my flour. And then I melt my butter on low And then once your butter's melted, your yeast is risen, and you beat your eggs with the liquid sugar and the sugar and the salt, and beat that so it's really frothy. And then you start off adding the yeast to your flour, and then you'll add the eggs to your flour, and you start off with that slowly kneading. And I do everything by hand, and I know it's crazy, but I still do it very traditional. So I do everything by hand. And then I add in the butter slowly, so it incorporates each time. And then after that, it's a lot of waiting around for it to rise. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and once it rises, you then make your loaf, and then you let it rise for a second time. Mm-hmm. And then after that rises, I personally always do like the sign of the cross on my loaves mm-hmm. before I bake them. And you bake them in a 350-degree oven. And it's about 15 minutes, and then you're going to rotate them like from the top to the bottom, bottom to the top, for about another 12 to 15 minutes.
Fantastic.
And that's how I do my sweetbread.
And then we have some of the most awesome sweetbread. It's delicious. I've had the opportunity of tasting it. We've used it for some fundraisers for the Society of Portuguese American Students, the Portuguese Club at the three campuses there at Tulare. And hopefully one day we'll do it here at Fresno State with Jasmine.
I will look forward to that.
Good.
I've been training her to do it, too.
Oh, fantastic. We need to also maybe have a class to teach people. We have to bring you up.
Oh, that will be fun.
That would be. Thank you so much for sharing that most awesome Masa Savada recipe, and have a great day. Thank you, Filomena.
You too.
Appreciate
Bye.
It. Thank you. So doesn't that sound yummy? Portuguese sweetbread?
I'm salivating.
Homemade,
over here. Oh my
not
goodness.
Bought at a bakery, yeah. Which the bakery stuff is also pretty good, but this is super special.
Nothing beats homemade.
That's right. Well, thank you. Thanks to Filomena Pimentel Rocha for the recipe of the week, which is the Portuguese sweetbread, or as we call it in Portuguese, Massa Sovada. It's very traditional in the islands of the Azores. Not as traditional in some areas of mainland Portugal, but very traditional in all of the islands. Every single island in the Azores has Massa Sovada, and the recipes are all very similar, but they all have, you know, their own different, the way they do it, as Filomena mentioned. And I thank her for spending some time with us. Next week, we're going to have another young lady here with us, and she'll be giving the recipe for arroz doce, sweet rice, or rice pudding, Portuguese rice pudding. And hope you enjoyed the Masa Savada recipe. We're collecting all these recipes, and hopefully when we have everything online, we'll have them online also and some information for you. Okay? Mm-hmm. And from here, we're going to transition to our last segment, correct?
Yes. We're going to go right into a course. We always end with our community events and kind of just anything that's going on right now in the Central Valley of California. One specific, I know it just happened this past Monday, part of the lecture series at Fresno State, correct?
Correct. So just as a reflect, thank you for allowing me to do that. Mm-hmm. It was, I think, a good lecture. We had about 100 people attend, more or less. It was at 6 o'clock at the Peters Auditorium Building, Peters Building Auditorium, I should say, PB 191. It was given by Rita Faden, who is the president of the Luso American Development Foundation. She spoke for about 35 minutes or so about Portugal, the European Union, and the transatlantic relations. And then was a fascinating exchange of questions. You know, she was very, very impressed with the questions, how knowledgeable people were of Portugal, how knowledgeable people were, students and community members, and two very young students, 111 and 113, were there also and asked some very interesting questions about the European Union, about Portugal, and about the relationship between Portugal and the United States. And so it was really, really exciting. We also got to talk. We ended it with some closing remarks by Congressman Jim Costa, who was there present to listen to the lecture and who gave some closing remarks. She was introduced by Fresno State President Dr. Joseph Castro, who introduced the lecturer. Mm-hmm. And we also got an opportunity to talk about some of the things that we're doing, including I promoted our Portuguese American Hour. I promoted our recent edition for communicating with the public, which is a once a monthly publication called Legacy that is going to be with student work from Fresno State. And we talked about an event that we have going on actually right now to help with the Portuguese Oral History Project, which is a crowdfunding, which is through Fresno State, the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute, where people can log on on, and obviously donate anything from $10 all the way up to whatever they want to, $500. We'll accept anything.
Yeah.
But we also got to talk about that as well. So it was a good event. Like I said, about 100 people present. Our next one is going to be on November the 7th. We'll talk about it in detail, but already put that down in your calendar, please. November the 7th, at the same time, they're all at 6 p.m. This one will be in the Agricultural Department. It'll be in the Agricultural Lecture Hall, I believe number 106, Ag 106, and it will be with the mayor of the city of Angra do Heroísmo, who is a sister city to Tulare. He'll talk about Angra, that city, had a particular importance during the Age of Exploration. He'll talk about Angra at that time and what Angra is today and about the Azores today as well. So that'll be very interesting. Free of charge, as always, for the public. Mm-hmm. November the 7th, correct. Yeah, November the 7th.
Okay.
Some other events are going on since we have just a few minutes. This weekend in Thornton, North Thornton is about 2.5 hours from here, Northern California, around Stockton area. Actually has the biggest Portuguese festa in California, anywhere between 30,000 to 40,000 people.
Oh, wow.
It's a big festa. It's in Thornton, Our Lady of Fatima festa. It's this weekend. It's going on all week long, but the full day events, or the events, you know, that are really big, are Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. And then next weekend, the weekend of the 25th, 26th, and 27th, it's Our Lady of the Rosary festa, another big festa, usually anywhere between 10 to 15,000 people in attendance as well, very big, in the small city of Hillmar. There will be actually more people in Hillmar during the festa than Hillmar has. Hillmar only has about 7,000 people. There will be a total of over 10,000 people. So 25th, 26th, 27th, these are all free of charge. There's usually lots of food, lots of opportunity to taste different foods, and also lots of entertainment. Just a couple of other events coming up, and that is this coming week, October 22nd in Tulare, the Tulare Joint Union High School District Staff Development Room, and that's this coming Tuesday at 7 p.m. We're going to have a presentation by Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute, free of charge for the South Valley folks. It's called Vozes, the Past and the Present. Vozes meaning voices in English, and it's about the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute Oral History Project, so it'll be something worth everyone checking out. It's this coming Tuesday at 7 p.m., the location is 426 Blackstone Street, the Staff Development Room of the Tulare Joint Union High School District. It's a combination between Fresno State and the Tulare school system, in order to get people aware of all that's going on that's Portuguese at Fresno State, but focusing a lot on oral history, so we can get the idea about oral history. Is you have to have more people do oral history, not just me and four or five others that are helping me out, which will be guests in our show here very soon, but also to get other folks to do the history of their own family, of their friends, and everything mm-hmm. else. So the more you have, the more oral history you'll be able to collect. And so we're hoping that people who are interested, especially community leaders in the South Valley, will be present. Again, it's free of charge. There will be some Portuguese sweetbread. There will be some other desserts, and also coffee and refreshments. And then just to mark down your calendar, November the 2nd, Tulare also hosts the Portuguese folklore Saudade do Bravo of the Portuguese organization CPEC. We'll have a festa. It's called the São Martinho Festa. Hopefully we'll have one of their organizers talk to us as a guest here in the future, but do put that down. And November the 9th is a big day in Tulare, also south of us. It's the festival of all the Portuguese marching bands in California. 14 of them will be in Tulare. Hundreds of people, usually, you know, with everyone participating in everything else, probably close to 1,000 people. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's an all-day event with concerts, with lots of food opportunities, lots of different things, free of charge also to everyone who would like to attend. So lots of different things going on in the Portuguese-American community, Thornton in the North Valley all the way to Tulare in the South.
Yeah, covering all of California right there.
Correct. The Valley's here, and there's also events in Southern California as well. But we're going to concentrate, obviously, on the events here in the Valley. And we're very proud that through this Portuguese American Hour, we can reach a wider audience that may be or not be of Portuguese background, but is interested in everything that's going on that's Portuguese in the Valley. So we're glad to be here. The Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute is not just something for the university. It's something also for the community. Our biggest thing is to have university presence, but also to have the community at the university, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that's what we're here for. Cast as wide of a net as we possibly get.
So that's it. That's our song.
That's our song. That's our song, cue.
The Chamarrita that I'm going to teach Esmeralda and Justice one day how to dance it.
The Chamarrita. I look forward to that. That's going to be fun. So like I said, that's our cue. That's our time for today. Another edition of the Portuguese American Hour. Make sure you tune in next Wednesday. We'll be back here with me, Justice Neves, and Dennis Borges.
Yes, we will be here. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Boa tarde.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.